Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
Andrew has just shown me some remarkable pictures from the Pride Parade. Where are those posted?
These are on WGNTV.com. I know we have some on WGNRadio.com as well. These are some of the aerial shots
nice.
I was showing you with all the police.
Looks like the helicopter was flying at about 45 feet.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Let me know when Paul Conrad's ready to join us. Paul Conrad from Channel 9. Channel 9 had a nice float out there yesterday as well.
They did, and you have hellos from Anna Balaval and Pat Tamasulo.
I don't like either one of them.
Okay, they said tell them hi.
No, they're both great. And a beautiful weekend where we were supposed to get whacked by thunderstorms yesterday, and it didn't turn out to be true. Everything just kind of blew north, which is great. Kind of a truncated week this week. I will be gone Wednesday and Thursday. I'm making a road trip to New York, and then I'll be back. We have an announcement about this show coming up in a little more than an hour, about 7:20 this morning. I think people will be pleased.
You're not moving the show to New York, though.
No. I'm not looking for a place for the show.
Are you going to see the last performance of Hamilton?
I am not. No. Okay. When I say New York, I mean upstate New York. Okay. I'm actually going to bring my brother back.
Cool.
I don't mean like, you know, I have to go and collect him, like I have custody of him. he doesn't fly, so we're going to do a brother road trip.
We like when he comes to visit.
Yeah, I know you do, because he comes in and he goes, coffee and food for everybody, my brother's paying.
It's great.
And he calls me Red.
And he calls you Little Red. That's right.
Little Red.
Start the music, please. Yeah, boy. That sound could only mean one of two things. Either Paul Conrad's ready to go or he's trapped in a bear trap. Which is it?
I'm here. Ready.
All right. All right. We have missed our regular segment. How was your weekend?
Yeah, it was great.
Excellent.
And
that's
yours?
Paul Conrad's How Was Your Weekend? I actually played golf with my son, which is good.
Ah, that's a nice idea.
Yeah. You know, I know that having 47 children like you have can be tiring.
Yeah.
But, you know, once they move out.
It gets better, huh?
No. No, you treasure the time you have with them.
Huh. Yeah, it does get better then.
Write that down. Treasure the time you have with them.
It gets better when they move out.
I don't think you're getting the full impact of the message.
I think maybe we're probably at different points in life. You don't have a 5-year-old, right?
No. Now I have my first grandchild who is 6 months old. She's perfect.
That's a little, you know, for a guy, you're not much that much older than I am, and you got a grandchild.
Yeah, huh?
And I got a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Well, you didn't find a woman that would, you know, make babies with you for a long time.
Yeah, it took forever.
Yeah.
And I like to think that, you know, I'm not that bad.
You know? I remember Paul Conrad's slogan, I'm not that bad.
Well,
I guess, you know, it takes time to find the bloom on the rose or whatever that.
And you got to get to a clinic if you find it.
Yeah.
You find bloom on the road, you got to go to a doctor. You got to
right
get that removed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that thing will get infected so fast, it's not even.
You got
funny.
Nothing but trouble.
Yep.
All right. In the summer of Conrad, what's ahead? Is there a big family vacation?
Oh, well, I'm excited about this. I leave Thursday with my 8-year-old son, Von Zygmunt, and we go on this camping thing, and there's no electricity. There's no toilet. There's an outhouse, and you have to pump a thingamajigger for water to come out. Did I say no electricity?
Yeah, you did, actually.
No electricity, and it's going to be a knockdown fun time.
And you guys just go out in the woods and have this sort of...
Yeah, we go to Bussy Woods, you know,
Does he know that you're doing this, your son?
Yeah, we've been counting down the days.
He signed off on the fact that you're just going to be in the woods. Does he get to bring his cell phone?
No cell service.
How about his friends? Does he get to bring friends?
No friends, just him and me. Men.
Yeah.
Two boys.
You thought about maybe just checking in at the peninsula downtown and ordering room service?
I have thought about it. But, you know, I'm making memories is what I'm doing.
Right.
And nothing like quality time. No, you know, get rid of all the electronics. I can't wait.
Well, it does sound like fun. It really does. And like I said, you got to treasure these moments.
Yeah. And I've been working on my wrestling in case, you know, like a bear or a lion.
Have there been a lot of bear sightings in Bussy Woods?
Yeah. Listen, you get on the internet, and like every time you turn around, you see bears, some of them walking on their back legs.
So Schaumburg's been overrun by bears.
Oh, yeah.
You would have figured I would have heard about that.
Yeah. No, it's out there. Trust me. I saw like six of them in a swimming pool.
Did not know that.
Yeah. It's amazing.
The cute one is the one with the floaties.
Yeah.
You know, the bear that can't actually paddle all the way across.
Yeah, because you'd think a bear would be able to do that. But so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah. How about yourself? You got any big plans?
No. Nope, nothing.
Nothing.
No. I just come in here. I do this show. That's really all I need.
That says how much you love your job is what that says and how you are in your sweet spot.
That's right. I don't know why you had to giggle when you said that, but sure,
you
that's
know,
absolutely
I
true.
Like saying that sweet spot.
All right, now I have an idea.
Yeah.
One of these mornings, you know, because Mondays we always kick the week off with
you.
I think we shouldn't tell TV or radio, and you and I should just switch places.
Oh, I'd love that.
You show up here, I show up there, and we just see how fast people notice.
That sounds excellent. How long is your show?
It goes till 10.
That's a long time.
Yeah,
mine
that's
goes
a lot
till
of talking.
10 also. And you have to talk that whole time?
Well, there's commercials. Yeah, there's news and sports.
But then I'd run out of things to say by 6:15.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why it's 6:15. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
All right. Apparently, Paul has run out of things to say. It's my friend Paul Conrad.
All right. It is time.
Live from Channel 9. All right. Coming up on the show, the world is still spinning post-Brexit. And the financial impact, incredible and frankly, a little overstated for us. However, as the dawn comes to the markets opening this morning, hold on to something, kids, because there's a lot of trades in the pipeline, and when they fire the computers up and reboot their Prodigy and CompuServe, you're going to see some damage in the markets early today. Don't panic. Don't even look. Look away, and you're going to be okay. We'll cover the financial side of Brexit all morning and the fact that many Brits woke up over the weekend and went, hold on, that counted? I didn't know that counted. I thought we were just kidding around.
No do-overs.
We need leaders like yourselves at the local and state and federal level who understand how to work with other leaders to manage risks, who understand that bombastic comments in turbulent times can actually cause more turbulence, and who put the interests of the American people ahead of their personal business interests.
Can we make the teleprompter go faster or something? I mean, come on, man. Plus, who in Hillary's campaign writes the word bombastic, and there's nobody in the pipeline that goes, you know, 90% of America thinks you shouldn't say that. Bombastic. Ugh. The wonder of Donald Trump continues. He shows up Friday morning in Scotland. And you probably at some point saw the news over the weekend related to this. But he's in Scotland. It is the absolute jackpot if you're the presidential candidate, and it's a total accident. He's in there to reopen Turnberry, this legendary golf club and resort, one of the great British UK gems. And he shows up. This is in Scotland. He shows up, and he doesn't know that Scotland voted overwhelmingly against Brexit, and then spends the first 12 minutes of his global speech, his speech that all of the world is watching, not on Brexit, not on the vote that just happened, not on the impact of the European Union or the UK or the United States, but on his golf course, and also, by the way, on the fact that they put in a state-of-the-art sprinkler system, and I'm not making it up.
No, you're not.
It's just unbelievable. You can't make it up. We got some great sound later from John Oliver. And if you have not seen last week tonight, John Oliver doing a great job. This Sunday night news recap show of the week. Very funny. Not for grandma, unless grandma curses. But it's a very entertaining show. But let's play a couple of clips here. Jake, let's go Jake's choice. Jake, what do you like? Tell me what you want to play next.
We could, because Hillary, that first thing I just played there, that was the first time she would address the Brexit on camera.
Uh-huh. Yeah, bombastic.
So, yeah, there, yeah. And she went on a little bit more. Now, this one's 45 seconds. The teleprompter is not that much faster.
All
but
right, so
I think
hold
it's
on
important.
To something, but listen to the words. Here you go.
No one should be confused about America's commitment to Europe. not an autocrat in the Kremlin, not a presidential candidate on a Scottish golf course. We have to reaffirm that the United States and the United Kingdom are different countries in many important ways, economically, politically, demographically. But we still have a lot of common interests and values. You can't respond with a snarky tweet. You've actually got to deliver results because you know you're going to see them at the supermarket and at your kids' ball games and everywhere else in the city.
I don't know. The Clinton campaign put out an ad pretty quickly. This is either her campaign or the super PAC. It may have been the super PAC. But put together a little bit of Donald Trump's speech in Scotland. And again, he didn't know the Scottish people voted against it. He congratulated the Scottish people on their vote.
I can't believe that is so. That was one of the biggest, you know, facets of that.
Who's flying with him? Where's the Elvis guy to whisper in his ear?
I don't know.
I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus on Veep gets more facts, and it's a made-up show. Here's the campaign commercial featuring Trump in all his glory.
Enormous shockwaves from Britain's historic vote to leave the European Union. Global markets are plummeting.
Every president is tested by world events, but Donald Trump thinks about how his golf resort can profit from them.
When the pound goes down, more people are coming to Turnberry.
Stocks tank around the world.
Brand new sprinkler system, the highest level.
He's talking about his new sprinkler system.
In a volatile world, the last thing we need is a volatile president.
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
Now, the odd thing about that commercial is he didn't sound volatile there. He sounded crazy. He's in the middle of the biggest story in the world, and he's talking about his sprinkler system. And by the way, he's not wrong about the finances of this. But see, that's the chip he doesn't have. Inside your brain, everybody's got a chip, and that chip stops you from saying the inappropriate thing your brain is saying at that point. Mm-hmm. There's not a single time during the day where all of us don't at some point have something completely inappropriate in our head. But we have the chip, and the chip stops us. The chip functions and stops us from saying it. Yes, you're going to make more money because your golf resort is going to have more visitors because the pound is down. But you're running for president of the United States. You don't say it out loud like the disaster of Britain leaving the European Union is a win for the Trump organization, you fool.
I always say hit the pause button.
Don't hit send.
Hit pause and hit reset. By the way, the protest, there were protesters lined up along the along Turnberry holding up signs. One was a choice sign. And Trump ordered the Scottish police to tell them to leave because he didn't like what was written on one of the signs, many of the signs, one in particular. And the police said no.
Of course
we
not.
Our people have as much right to line and protest and say what they
Free
want
speech.
As well. Free speech. And so the second event that they had later in the weekend, the Trump didn't want the media to be at all. So he turned the media just, away as a whole.
You know, the John Oliver stuff I was talking about, we'll play that later. But there's a point that's made, and I was talking to people about this all weekend, and it's this. You don't get a do-over. When you make a choice like the British people made 52-48 on Friday, or Thursday, you don't get a do-over. You don't get to go, oh, wait, you mean that's what it means? The number one searched Google term in the UK over the weekend was what's the EU? That should frighten the hell out of you. So they go and they vote. They vote based on this Nigel Farage and his cockamamie campaign. There's not that big a difference between what you see in there and what you're seeing here. And the number one reason people don't flock to Hillary Clinton is not because they're Republicans. It's because she's a terrible candidate. So, yeah, look, David Cameron's leaving. He seems like a decent guy. Maybe we pick him up.
Hey.
Well, free
not,
agent?
Not born here, though. That's the only thing. I don't think he's born here.
Our friend Chuck Todd on Meet the Press actually confronted the Trump campaign on their little golf speech. Look, who loves golf more than me?
You? No one.
But you can't go and make a golf speech on the morning of Brexit. Here's Chuck Todd on Meet the Press.
What was a head-scratching event earlier this week, Mr. Manafort, which is on the day of the biggest news event in the world. He is in the country at the heart of this, and he's promoting a golf course.
This is an example, again, of the tone deafness of the Clinton campaign. The American people care about what is going to happen to their lives, about change. Hillary Clinton is ignoring the reality because she's part of the establishment. She can't get away from the fact that she is part of the problem that's being rejected.
But why was it appropriate for Mr. Trump to be promoting a golf course on the day of, frankly, what could be the most impactful decision that a country has made that impacts, you know, the global community in a way that we're not fully comprehending yet, and he's promoting a golf course in the middle of his campaign?
Mr. Trump is an international businessman. His success as an international businessman and a person who gets things done is one of the attractions of his candidacy, so that when he says he's going to bring real change to the country, voters believe him. Unlike Mrs. Clinton, who has been saying that for 25 years, and in those 25 years, the only changes that have happened have made people's lives worse.
Look, this is part of the thing that makes your head explode if you try to ask a politician questions, because they never answer the question. They just go down their own crazy road. That's Paul Manafort, the guy that looks like Elvis, who now runs the Trump campaign. We've got a ton of other sound to get to this morning, and we will. It's 6:29. We'll come back with your big story in a second on 720 WGN.
I have edema on my thigh. Pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
All right, coming up 7:20, an announcement about the show. Top secret announcement about the show. No one will know.
Fungus on my toe, and I need
at 6:41, Dr. Kevin Most joins us. How was your weekend?
It was great. Yeah. I can't believe you're talking about congressional and that, and nobody mentioned John Rahm.
John Rahm in regards to how well he played, you're talking about?
Yeah, here his first event as a professional, and almost won it, and qualifies for the British. I think he's the real deal.
Well, yeah, and it's an important note to make, but not nearly as good as Dave's story.
Yeah, yep.
But thanks, Doc.
all right, so hot, steamy weekend, and you know, I know we do the sunblock thing all the time. But I see people running around all weekend, and they start on Friday, and they look. Like Conan O'Brien, they're pasty. Like Jim Gaffigan, they're pasty and they're white. And then on Friday, you got to use dental records to identify them. When are people going to get the message?
Yeah, and especially like you said, how hot it was. You know, this is sunblock on every hour, 2 hours max, to be honest with you, because you're sweating it off and it's getting out of there. And we really do need to get that across, because people say, oh, this looks so healthy. It looks so healthy. You're doing damage to your skin. You're increasing your chance of skin cancer, which is the number one cancer out there. And really, let's be smart, guys, even especially the kids. Make sure that you take great care of the kids, especially the very young ones. All those kids under 1 year old should be lathered up, and they should be make sure that you put it back on them, because they're the most susceptible to a bad burn at this time.
I got to open up like a kiosk or something in high traffic areas with like a car wash sprayer, and you just run people through there every hour. Just line up, come through, and I just blast you with sunblock.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, you could, you know, those spray-on ones, the powdery ones, those would be great. You could sit out there on Michigan Avenue and do that.
What's the rule if you forget, though, Doc? Because sometimes when we're
playing... Don't go outside?
No, but once you're out in the sun, you start to feel the burn. No relation to Bernie Sanders, of course, but you feel the burn, and then you put the sunblock on. Is it too late at that point?
It's not too late. It's going to work. But really, sunblock should be put on about 30 minutes before you're going to go out in the sun. You see everybody doing it on the first tee. What actually they should be doing is doing it before they even leave their home, going to the golf course, or even leave their home, going to the pool or to the beach. If you can start to feel it, you know that you've missed an opportunity there.
Let's go live to Sandberg, who doesn't wear sunblock. Wait, hold on a second, Sandberg. Try it one more time.
No, I wear sunblock all the time. And what I like to do is I put it on at home. After I get a shower, I put on my regular lotion. Then I put the sunblock on while I'm nude. So that way I cover everything. And then I don't have any, don't miss any spots. It's very easy to apply. Right. And then I put on my clothes or my
It's interesting you say that, because I also put on a sunblock while I'm nude. But I do it in public. Yeah, I just go out to the first tee. It's a real distracting thing for whoever I'm playing against.
In the car when you're pulling into the golf course.
Doesn't it get all sticky with you put your clothes on over your naked body?
But the thing is, no. Mary, Sandberg, and everyone
it's
else.
Covered.
Doc taught me this. You know, unless you're wearing those fabrics that are SPF protected shirts, those rays are blasting right through your clothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you don't want your sensitive areas getting, those type of rays.
I actually like to use the, I like the smell of the sunscreen as a scent anyway. So it's not sticky though, Mary.
I got to use
better
stuff.
The other thing that Mary said that's great, If you think about people who do it on the golf course, what do? You put it on your face, then you walk up to somebody and say, can you see any sunblock? Because you want to rub it out, right?
Right.
And show you the areas that you've missed until after when you get home now and you've got a quarter size block of red at an area that you missed.
Or you have the finger marks on your neck.
Exactly. Yep. So if you can do it at home where you really have good control of what you're doing, at least your base is good.
Now, the other thing, too, is I'm thinking about making a helmet completely out of the same plastic used in sunglasses. Because look at the stripes I have on either side of my head from being outside.
Holy cow. You know? Yeah. Is that what that is?
Yeah. I got tan lines where the sunglass bar is.
Look at that.
Yeah. So that obviously blocks those rays nicely. All right, we come back, Doc. The other thing I wanted you to address in regards to the general topic of summer health is, again, when you know you are about to head into a dangerous area from, we used to call it heat stroke, heat sickness, whatever the term is that applies. Because Friday when it was crazy hot and Saturday when it was crazy hot, there were a couple times where I was referencing that in my head because you're pounding the Gatorade, you're pounding the water, and maybe it's not making enough of a difference. Stand by. More with Dr. Kevin Most in a second. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. You know, Doc, Dave Ennett, you're familiar with Dave Ennett, world famous. Yes. Dave Ennett.
Yes.
Dave was off for a couple days last week, and Dave, explain why.
I was recovering from a procedure for skin cancer, and it's the third one I've had, but this time there were two cancers involved, and one on my forehead and one on the top of my head, on my scalp. There was a squamous cell. Neither of these were melanoma, they were removed surgically with a procedure called Mohs surgery.
Mohs surgery.
Yeah, yep. Which I've had before.
Done by a guy named Mo?
It's M-O-H.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not really sure. Probably was a guy named Mo.
Guy named Mo. Yep. And you now have nine staples in your head.
I have nine staples in the top of my head.
And that wasn't an accident at Staples.
No,
that was actually
an intended
thing. But you and I were talking out there a second ago, Dave, and Kev's the same age. We all grew up, Kev and Dr. Most, in an era where nobody was talking about sunblock. People were holding up aluminum foil reflectors and putting, bacon grease on their arms. They were trying to do what we're telling people not to do now.
Yeah, they were. And Dave, a couple of great points that Dave made that people may not have subtly picked up. You know, one is he had a skin cancer in his scalp. So when we kind of look at ourselves and we try to figure out if we have skin cancer, stop doing that. Get in to see your doctor and make sure that he does a complete skin exam. Make sure you do that at least once a year. Anything that's suspicious, they're going to monitor it and they might biopsy it. The other thing that Dave said is the Mohs surgery. And there are some great Mohs surgeons here in Chicago. And what that is they start to take out the skin cancer, and then they'll go and look under the microscope to see if they got it all. And then they'll come back and take a little bit more, just so they make sure they get all of the cancer with doing the minimal amount of surgery. And you have some very talented people here that in the city that can do this so that your scarring is very minimal. So don't be afraid of having that done.
And Dave, you were saying that it was an uncomfortable thing to go through after the surgery, and it's still a little bit uncomfortable. So if you can avoid it, avoid it.
Yeah, it's believe me, if I could do it, if I had a do-over here. Right. But now that I had this done, I know it's over and done with, and I've gotten much smarter, as we all have, about being in the sun. Unfortunately, there were 40 years or so earlier in my life where we just didn't really know.
We never talked about it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yep.
We just didn't talk about it. All right, Doc, let's talk about summer health here for a second when it comes to food. Yep. Big 4th of July weekend coming up. Everybody's going to be out grilling. Everybody's going to throw the potato salad out Wednesday, eat it on Sunday. It's just, you got to be careful, right?
You really do. You know, with food, barbecue season, there's a couple things that I would say be really careful about, especially when it's 90 degrees. Any of these cream-based salads, any salads that are out, if they're out in the sun for a long time, what happens is the bacteria multiply in the salad, but then they put off a toxin that's in the salad that you don't even taste. So you're eating the salad, and there's enough flavor in it that you feel it's okay. Within a couple hours, you can be violently ill. So any of those, make sure they're set on ice, make sure they stay cool.
What about
cooking chicken and cooking hamburgers. You know, if you're going to cook hamburgers, you say, I like mine rare. You know what? make sure it's done at a restaurant so that they're actually testing to make sure that the temperature of the meat, even at the inside of the meat, is 160 degrees. And chicken should be cooked completely. Do not eat any chicken that's not completely cooked. 97% of chicken have some bad bacteria on them prior to you cooking them.
Andrea Darlis, question for Doc.
Doc, I love to go to the farmer's markets and get the fresh vegetables. Is that okay? I mean, I know those have been sitting out, and sometimes they sit out for days and days before people buy up the produce. Is that okay to buy?
Yep, those are all fine to buy. The biggest thing with them is just, you know, you say, oh gosh, I'm going to buy these peaches. They look so great. And you buy them, they put them in a bag, and you get in your car and you start eating them. Don't do that. Get home and at least wash them off, rinse them off really well. There's a lot of bacteria on the outside of those. But really, those are not going to get to be rotten, and you'll be able to know when they are just by the texture. So the vast majority of those are fine. But especially any of those that are in the dirt, you know, carrots and potatoes, make sure that you wash those really well before using them.
We're talking about mosquitoes in relation to Zika and the Olympics, but do we still have a West Nile issue here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you make an interesting point. Everyone's looking Zika. But really, we should be concerned more about West Nile and Lyme disease. So West Nile, everybody remembers, it doesn't affect people too poorly. Matter of fact, probably 80-90% of us have probably had West Nile and not even known it. But you get a fever, you get a headache, you get body aches, you can get a rash. But the severe infections that we see sometimes in seniors, it can get into the brain and can cause bad things. It can cause coma, seizures, and even paralysis in some people.
You also made the point in some notes that you were nice enough to send over, as always, that you can get poison ivy from your dog?
Yeah.
I never knew this.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Poison ivy, about 85% of people will be affected by poison ivy. So there's a small portion of the population that can take poison ivy leaves and it doesn't affect their skin at all. However, people say, I'll ask people all the time, well, you obviously have poison ivy. You see them in the office. They're like, I can't have poison ivy. I wasn't anywhere. You know, where were you? You know, and then I find out that their dog ran through some, you know, to chase a rabbit, came back, they pet the dog. The oil from the poison ivy is on the fur of the dog, and it's now in their hand. And people always say, it's spreading. I'm like, no, it's not spreading. You're spreading it. So a couple things with poison ivy. If you think you were exposed, get in, take a cool shower with soapy water. It'll break down the oil. Take the clothes that you are wearing and put them in the wash immediately. The oil will stick around, and you will continue to spread if you wear those clothes again or touch those clothes again. And then the big thing there, if you have it really bad, get into the doctor because we'll put you on a strong dose of steroids to keep that inflammation down.
We know that kids are less active than they've ever been, but in the summertime, occasionally they do get outside, even if it's accidental. And while they're outside, you can get, you know, the bumps and bruises we got as kids. I remember specifically a million times as a kid, you wipe out on your bike, you got gravel and a scrape on your knee. You know, you scrape the gravel out, you get back on your bike and you ride away. But right. You got to treat that type of thing, right?
You do, especially those you know, road rashes is what we call them. You'll get it on your legs when you wipe out on your bike. And really, the big thing there is a couple things. One, you've just exposed a whole bunch of skin. So skin's our biggest defense to keep bacteria out. So the chance of that getting infected is pretty high. So you really want to wash that out as much as possible. If you can't get all the little specks of dust, dirt out of there, get in to see somebody. We have more aggressive ways that we can clean to get that out of there, because what happens with some of that is that the skin scars over it and you have tattooing is what we call, where the gravel and the dirt is now encased in your skin and you say, oh yeah, I wiped out there, you know, the skin's healed, but you still have the marks there. So unless you want them as a badge of honor, get in there to get them cleaned out.
How are we alive?
Yeah.
How did the
Amazing.
70s not kill us?
Right.
So, let your kids be active. Encourage them to be active. If the number one injury your kid has this summer is carpal tunnel from texting, they're probably not active enough. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, get them out. You know, it's a right of being a kid. You know, you're going to get a laceration. You're going to get burned. You're going to get scraped. But it teaches you a lot, too.
Dr. Kevin Most, courtesy of Northwestern Medicine, Impact Every Day. Nice to talk to you, bud.
You got it. We'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show continues at 7-Eleven. You know, in a world where we're talking Brexit and we're talking about this presidential campaign and this notion of refugees comes up and up again and again and again. for generations now, there's been an issue in the Middle East between the Palestinians and the Jews. And there's a book out that deals with this in a way that I don't think has been dealt with before. Ben Ehrenreich's the author. The Way to the Spring, Life and Death in Palestine is the book. And Ben joins us now. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing today?
I am doing fine. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much.
Let's do a little Mideast 101. The occupation of Palestine means what?
Well, the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza and the Golan Heights began in 1967 after the Six-Day War, when Israel occupied those territories.
And we fast forward all the way to recent history, as in the last week or so, there is a continued push for occupation and moving into different areas as well?
Well, the occupation has remained pretty steady. What we've seen in the West Bank, really, you know, since shortly after the occupation began in 1968, has been increasing settlement of occupied Palestinian land by Israeli by Israeli settlers. There are now close to 500,000 Israeli settlers in the West Bank and East Jerusalem.
So you've got literally almost two generations that have grown up under this type of system. What's the effect been on these children who have become adults?
You know, growing up under occupation, I think from here it's easy to think that that just means maybe there are some soldiers on your land, and it certainly does mean that. But what I came to understand living there was the occupation is a complex system that reaches all aspects of Palestinian life. You know, people have probably heard about the checkpoint system and the wall, the permit system, all of which means that there are severe restrictions on where Palestinians can travel, sometimes not only restricting their travel into Israel, but restricting their travel inside the West Bank. There are restrictions on what kind of work people can do. There are restrictions on who people can marry. There are restrictions on where they can study. Really, every aspect of life. You know, sometimes it's even more extreme. You know, there are some who's allowed into your home. You know, there are a couple of houses that I write about in the book that have actually been single houses that have been walled off from the surrounding communities. And you know, of course, it also means frequent violence. There are thousands of Palestinians in Israeli military prisons. There's an entirely separate justice system, although that's not really the right word for it, for Palestinians living under occupation than the ones that Israelis use, with more than a 99% conviction rate, which means that anyone who comes to the attention of the Israeli authorities and is detained and arrested and charged will almost certainly go to prison. Which means prison is a reality, and having family members, you know, who've lost years to prison is part of everyone's life. And, you know, and many people end up being shot and injured and killed as well.
You know, perspective is either factual or personal, depending on where you are and what's happening that day, I suppose. But in the course of the extensive research you did for this book and the writing of the book, did you come away with it with the notion that politics have made this much worse, or that's just the reality of the story?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing is that from this country, we rarely get to see the Palestinian side at all. I think politics in the U.S. mean that the narrative that we're usually presented with in the media is predominantly the Israeli narrative. And we understand the entire situation through the lens of security threats to Israel. And, you know, some of that, I think, is important to acknowledge. But what gets left out is the reality that an entire population lives under and suffers through. And I think in that way, the politics here, which also means that we give $3.1 billion a year in military aid to Israel, most of which is used in severely unjust ways against the Palestinian population, that funding continues year after year and is probably going to be significantly raised in this next year.
So, well, hold on one second. I was just going to add one other thing that just came to me. The flip of this, I guess, is obvious, and that is if the terrorist organizations that allegedly represent the Palestinian people would stop engaging in those activities and stop recruiting to do the same, then Israel wouldn't have to be as heavy-handed as they appear to be. What's your finding in regards to that?
Well, you know, I think the word terrorism is one that always makes me a little edgy, because I think we tend to call violence by groups we don't like terrorism, and violence by groups we do like, you know, just normal. The fact is that, you know, in the last outbreak of armed conflict in the region, which was in the summer of 2014, a lot of attention in the media here went to so-called terrorist missile attacks from Hamas and, you know, from Gaza into Israel. Those killed, I believe, 6 Israeli civilians. Israeli missile barrages and rocket fire into Gaza killed 2,200 people, more than half of them civilians. Now, we can say that one of those things is terror and the other is not, but I think those words don't make a whole lot of sense when you're talking about that kind of imbalance of power and that kind of really, you know, a massacre.
When you talk to people about this, and obviously the perspective in the book is what we're speaking of here, but when you talk to people about this, what's the solution? And by the way, I don't buy into the notion that there isn't one. You know, President Carter sat here in numerous interviews over the past few years, and he's very passionate about the Middle East. And I still believe before he passes away, and he's not going anywhere anytime soon, this is his dream. His dream is to actually realize a lasting peace in the Middle East. I don't just sign off to the fact that it can never happen to you.
I don't either. And I think, you know, there have been a number of failed peace initiatives brought by the U.S., and I think those will continue to fail so long as the U.S. is, at the same time that it's insisting on peace, is funding violence. And so I think the first thing that has to happen is that this enormous amount of military funding that the U.S. is giving to Israel, more than we give any other nation on earth, more than we've historically given any other nation on earth, has to stop. And only when that stops, I think, can the U.S. even pretend to play any kind of honest role in brokering some kind of a solution.
Ben, I've always been interested in the struggle over the Golan Heights, that region. And when I was there, I actually turned to your book. In the very beginning, you mentioned this conflict. And what struck me even more so than that was the role that women played in organizing committees, village by village, neighborhood by neighborhood. That, to me, was quite interesting, the role that women played.
Yeah, you know, I think in a lot of, you know, the sort of stereotyped notions of the Muslim world and the Middle East that we have in the U.S., we don't imagine that such a thing is possible. But certainly in one of the villages that I spent the most time in, the West Bank village of Nabi Saleh, the women played an extremely active role. This is a village that has weekly demonstrations against the Israeli occupation. And, you know, at those demonstrations, women are always out in the front. And not just as marchers, but in terms of the organizational role that they play. And, you know, I think that's something that will be quite new to a lot of American readers.
The book's called The Way to the Spring, Life and Death in Palestine. You know the rule. Get two copies. You're careless. You lose one. Ben Ehrenreich. Ben, nice work. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Steve.
That's Ben Ehrenreich. And again, you know, it's such a tough topic, but the minute you go, it'll never get fixed. It'll never be solved. It'll never get fixed, and it'll never be solved. It's a self-fulfilling, you know, prophecy. And while I don't disagree with the fact that Israel has massive military power, knowing what Hamas does on a regular basis, to me, sitting here, it's hard for me to judge Israel's response. Because if Canada started shooting at us that way, would we respond in a way where you'd count the missiles afterwards? And I'm not saying that's what he's doing specifically, because I think his story is an important one to tell.
Right.
You know, these are kids that have been growing up in that world who are now adults who are having kids of their own, in some case grandkids, and they deserve a better life than that.
Right. And they all share borders, obviously, too. Israel, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan. They're right. They're steps from each other.
Not exactly your vacation hotspot for the summer. After doing this for many years, any time that you have the general manager and the vice president of content, or what we used to call the program director, in the studio,
I got all my sisters with me.
It usually wasn't good, and it involved me getting cardboard boxes, getting them together. Good morning, Jimmy DeCastro and Todd Manley.
We want to have a meeting with you in the bathroom. Could we have a short meeting with you in the bathroom?
Whatever. I'm fine now.
Okay.
What are you guys doing here?
First, let me report, Mr. Dave Ennett, your plaque has shined up beautifully. Spit shined beautifully for you today, and I have done that often, just as I promised I would.
I know. You are a man of your word, Jimmy.
I spit on Bertrand's, and then I shine yours up. Is that a
well,
problem?
Well, that's fine with me. Thank you.
Those were the orders. Todd, how are you?
I'm good, Steve. How are you doing?
Nice to see you, buddy.
Wow, is it fun down here in this place? It's beautiful. The sun's shining, the city of Chicago, the Pride Parade, and today we're here to... For some very exciting news, Mr. Cochran, as our friend Rob Feeder apparently reported this morning, we've come to terms with an extension of the morning show, which you are the ringleader of, and that Steve Cochran is going to get to grace the airways of 7:20 a.m. for 2 more years on top of 2 more years, which would make that 4 more years, which would make his granddaughter almost ready for college. Is that right, Mary and Mike?
Yeah, it's very exciting. Thank you very much for that. And thank you both. I'm lucky. I think I said this to Rob Feeder, but I work with who I want to work with. You know,
well, Andrea it's an amazing troop. Forever. The whole morning show. It's an amazing troop of people. Andrea, able to keep you online and co-chaired to make sure it's all right. Dave Ennett with the sports. We love Orient still jumping in from occasion. Steve Grzanich, the best producers now in the world. Now that we got rid of that disappointing Kevin.
And Ross, disappointing Ross as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But Sandberg and Mike doing a fabulous job. Mike and Jake, they're both doing great.
All of them.
Yeah.
And everyone associated, Steve Grzanich, the news department, everybody that's come through, which is so neat. And I do have to say from a management perspective, Rob mentioned it, Steve's been involved in every decision that Todd and I have made. He introduced me to Todd, and thank God I got introduced to Luke Skywalker, so I feel like the Force is with us. Starting with Dave Ennett in the beginning of the year, we were able to, with the help of the Blackhawks, John McDonough and Jay Blunk, who joined me in congratulations today. When I show you their texts, you're going to be very proud.
Oh, very nice.
They say you're a star. And Jim Phillips with Northwestern, Lou Manfredini. Now we have Todd Manley, Rokon and Anna, and you. I mean, talk about having an amazing core of people.
You're the only one we don't have locked up.
Bill and Wendy, well, that's Larry and I are a team, you know that? And we do owe a shout-out to Larry, because Larry has been behind every decision here, too. There's nothing that hasn't been done with the two of us together. And having a ball doing it. So what a special, special place. Thank you to the audience. I've talked to a lot of you about this. I've talked to all the other staff, and everybody joins me in congratulating the morning show on where it is and how it's the foundation for such an amazing, talented group. Yesterday at the Pride Parade, Steve, we had 90 people. I'm next to Justin Kaufman and Pete and Jeff and Jackie and Shanae and the sales department. I mean, it was a really special day for us to celebrate this radio station just one other way and the pride of Chicago to be able to do it with.
Well, and a great day for Chicago, too, because once again, it proves that even in the wake of a terrible tragedy like Orlando, everybody could get together and celebrate. And because, as you pointed out, at 6 o'clock, the police and the forces that were out there, no troubles. Everybody just had a party.
I thanked every fireman and policeman I saw, and every single one of them said thank you back.
Yeah. You know, Todd, I think back to when you and I met in 1994. We were working together at a station called FM 100 in the Hancock Building, and we'd walk out. We'd try to go get some lunch or something. There was some loud guy in the hallways cheerleading everybody. It turns out it's Jimmy DeCastro who's running the station upstairs.
So?
And here, look what happened. We all ended up together at the biggest one in town.
Yeah. Well, I told you 20 years ago that this was the chair you should sit in. And so that's what makes today really special for me, because I really, in over the years, knowing the people that carried the banner of this place and tried to make Chicago a better community and have some fun along the way, you were the right guy. This is where you should have been all along.
Well, it's very nice. And as I think I said to Feeder as well, you know, to sit where Wally and Bob Collins and Spike sat, that's pretty great. I could use a new chair, frankly. I mean, I don't know if I still have one.
Ding, 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 ding. We just got one.
Yeah,
no, right.
That's our new chair.
Can I say one thing on behalf of us, too, the morning
course.
Show? We love working with you. I mean, you're funny, you're talented. I've known you forever, Steve. But
sexy.
You're very sexy, yeah.
Very
I
sexy.
Should have
don't
said that
so
first. But genuine, Steve, sincere, and honest. And that's... It's rare to say that in this day and age.
Everybody
and a generous
here,
man, too, we might
Thank
add.
You for that. Everybody here in this room has the same thing that we all suffer from, and that is we care deeply about this audience and about this radio station. It led to me being thrown out of here in 2010, and I believe, because of not just of our friendship, but because of your beliefs of what you wanted this to be, it led to us all coming back. So thank you for that, and as I always say to both of you, thanks for letting me work here.
Cooler than the other side of the My Pillow. Steve Cochran.
Woo! Thank you, boys. Appreciate it. And it is 7:30. We're back after this with the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
It's 743. Can we do the John Oliver here? John Oliver? Okay. John Oliver is a former correspondent on The Daily Show. He hosts a show on HBO on Sunday nights called Last Week Tonight. And John Oliver's Last Week Tonight this week, as in last night. So John Oliver's Last Week Tonight this week, last night. It always, the format follows this basic thing. He does some opening thoughts and then a little video piece, and he goes on to the meat of the show. This is not a show for everybody. It's on HBO. You know, it's got some language. It's got some references that maybe you might be uncomfortable with, but it's very funny and it's very on point week to week, and I like it. Here's John Oliver on some points. Make notes.
The United Kingdom, a place whose very name after this week's events is beginning to sound a bit sarcastic. Because the UK this week voted to leave the European Union, a decision that has shaken the world. And not in a Muhammad Ali beating Sonny Liston kind of way, more in a those IKEA meatballs you love contain horse kind of way. And the fallout in Britain has been swift and significant. David Cameron announced he would be stepping down in the wake of the vote, which should make me happy, but in this situation, it doesn't. It's like catching an ice cream cone out of the air because a child was hit by a car. I mean, I'll eat it. I'll eat it. But it's tainted somehow.
I'm not laughing. I'm really not.
No.
The important thing to remember here, kids, is there are threads in this story. And the thread from Brexit across the water to the Trump campaign is an important one. I think if there's one thing you need to consider here, and it's not the first time it's ever been mentioned, we've been preaching this for months. What's more important, your hate for Hillary or your love for country? Because there's no turning back. And you got to imagine the hairpiece in the chair. Here's John Oliver on that.
Then he said, your people have taken the country back, even though he was in Scotland, which overwhelmingly voted to remain in the EU. Then he said, it's been peaceful, which it absolutely hasn't. Then he immediately contradicted himself by saying it's been contentious and ugly. And then he summed the whole thing up as amazing. Now, if he had simply breathed audibly into the microphone, the same amount of information would have been conveyed. And the thing is, later that day, he found a way to make this whole thing about himself, tweeting, many people are equating Brexit and what is going on in Great Britain with what is happening in the US. People want their country back. And you might think, well, that is not going to happen to us in America. We're not going to listen to some ridiculously haired buffoon peddling lies and nativism in the hopes of riding a protest vote into power. Well, let Britain tell you, it can happen. And when it does, there are no do-overs.
That's the key, kids. There's no do-overs. You don't get a mulligan. This is it. Your vote counts, so make sure you know who to vote. By the way, again, I've been saying this all morning. I'll say it again. I've been saying it for months. If there was anybody other than Hillary Clinton running against Donald Trump, and I mean almost anybody, 320, 25, 30 million people in this country, almost anybody other than Secretary of State Clinton, other than Senator Clinton, other than Vice President Clinton or First Lady Clinton, anybody other than her, this would be a blowout by now. But there's not. And for anybody that wants to write Trump off the way I did months ago, you couldn't be more wrong. He's here. He's dangerous. That's all.
By the way, you know how many people have signed that petition to hold a second referendum?
Oh, back into Brexit?
Yeah. 3.5 million. But they're saying you can't do a do-over. No. That's
well,
not
think about that. 17 million people voted to leave. 52% of the vote, the majority. You know, we're talking about not telling 13 million Republicans who voted in the primary that Trump can't be the candidate and the troubles it would cause here and the invalidation of a democracy. It's the same thing there.
Yep.
Yeah, you can't tell 17 million people we were just practicing, even if a portion of the 17 million people didn't know that was a big deal until, you know, Saturday or Sunday. What a mess. In a world of disturbing news, especially on a Monday, I got a great story for you in just a second. The BET Awards, I mentioned them a second ago. If you do get a chance to see any clips today, nice tributes to Prince last night. They didn't like what Madonna did at the Grammys and said, wait till the BET Awards, we'll get it right. They did a great job. Yeah. So, and once again this year, I am a little disturbed. I was not honored as one of America's great black entertainers.
But there's always next year. You're like the Susan Lucci of the BETs.
I really am. That's a very good comparison.
Uh-huh. One day. One day.
By the way, it's the only time that comparison has ever been made. How about this story? About 40 homeless students in Chicago had a prom Saturday night. These are kids that never had a chance to go to prom. Jaleesa Thurston was one of the kids. She said, the prom's amazing because I never got to go. Thurston's 23, set to return to school later this year. She never attended her high school prom. She had been kicked out for some bad choices and then a pregnancy. On Saturday, she got a chance to wear a donated off-white two-piece evening gown thanks to a prom held by two local nonprofits. One's called Teen Living Program Chicago, which serves homeless kids between 14 and 24. And by the way, yeah, they're out there. I know there's an awful lot of successful people who listen to this show every day and listen to this radio station. But stop down and count your blessings. Yeah. Because they're out there, homeless kids between 14 and 24. There's also an organization called Sisterhood of the Traveling Heart that focuses on girls and teens around the world. It was a co-promotion for these two organizations to get together and throw this prom. Thurston said, I feel like I'm getting married. I'm glad I met TLP Chicago. They're wonderful people. The room where the prom was held was in the lower level of the Life Center Church of God in Christ in Chicago. They decorated it in navy blue and white. They had a candy table, a cake, and a cupcake stand. A prom queen and the king were crowned. And some of the students even performed at the prom. Michael Brown was one of the evening's performers. He rapped and freestyled and sang. He said, the day's really nice. The energy's really nice in the room. The ambiance is beautiful. It's a night to remember. Several local and national organizations provided donations, allowing the men to be outfitted with tuxedos, and the women got complimentary hairstyling and makeup application. These are beautiful kids enjoying what they ought to be enjoying at this point of their life, even if it's a couple years later than high school in some cases. So that's a really cool story. One of the women said, I'm from Chicago, so I just wanted to be able to help my hometown. The kids that are at TLP, they work, they're in school, they're doing a lot. In some cases, they're raising kids. I thought it'd be a great idea to have a prom because every high school student deserves it, says Muhammad, age 29. For those of us who never had the opportunity like Jaleesa or those who needed to be recognized for their resilience, we wanted to create a special day for them. It's pretty. It's beautiful. Ms. Thurston said on Saturday, I'm just enjoying myself in this great experience. So it made me feel good to read it.
That's very cool. Very,
ABC
very
News
cool.
on the majority of that report, by the way.
I just love that, you know?
It's a nice thing.
It's a feel-good, happy, good story.
It's a nice thing.
Yep.
Yeah. You guys have any prom stories you'd like to shed at this point?
Nope. Nope.
Nope.
How about you, Steve?
No, my prom experience was good. It was good.
I didn't go to my prom.
You didn't?
Nope.
Get out.
Hi, Dave. You didn't ask anyone?
I went to prom with the same guy junior and senior year. We went as friends junior year and more than friends senior year.
You know, you guys know Maureen. It's amazing she talks to me because she actually went to the prom with me 1 year. And,
really?
Yeah. And, you know, everything's not funny. And you know how you know this. It's because I said, do you want to go to the prom? And she said, yes. And I said, well, you should go then.
Did you really say that to her?
Yeah.
And she still went with you?
After she threw some rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good. Sambri, got a prom story?
Prom is super overrated.
Why? Because you didn't go?
I don't know. I did. I went senior year simply so I wasn't one of those, oh, I didn't go, people.
Like me?
Yeah.
Aww. Why do you say it's overrated?
It's stupid. You have to go and be quarantined. They don't let you leave. Like, you have to eat.
Have you met 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds? Yeah. Of course you're quarantined.
Bad food. We're all in these silly dresses with your hair up. It's just, like, lame.
See, I love the prom.
Okay, what would you have done if you weren't at prom? Party killer.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, what did you do? I mean, was it a...
I went, and I liked the person I went with.
Did you tell him how miserable you were throughout the prom?
Yeah.
This sucks.
I'm a little bit too cool for organized events, so...
here we go.
And we're herded in. You had to be there by a certain time. You can't leave because, oh gosh, we're all going to go drinking. And then we had to sign stuff, because if you were in a sport, you like...
Are you in the first generation of people that had parents rent hotel rooms for them?
Yes.
You want to talk idiotic. You know, of all the things that have come up, you know, excuse me, could you get Grandpa some more lemonade for me as I move over to the porch? Here's another thing. The birthday party gift bag for the kids that just attend the birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
That's a thing that started around 1990. This thing where kids go to the prom and then parents rent a hotel room for them.
They don't want him at their house. That's why.
Yeah, but our parents would never do that. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Oh, I went. Oh, we, no. We, I grew up, I came up with a crew of friends that parents supplied alcohol and got us rooms. But what is the big deal of a room when there's 12 of you in there? I did have my
date. No, here's the big deal. Because in the 70s, Dave, back me up on this. In the 70s, you lied to your parents, and you went, you fooled around in a car. And that's the way America was
right.
built.
That makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah, and if you want to start being honest with America, this is where the problem, or with your parents, this is where the problems are going to start.
I think I may have been conceived in one of those cars in the 70s. Yeah.
Hello.
Well, not in our cars.
Know, mm-hmm. You know what I never
different
got?
Cars.
Maybe you'll back me up on this, Mary, but I never got the let's go to prom 20 people. Let's rent two big limos and all those friends.
That's the other thing, you're crazy organization. You guys, your generation, you know what, Sandbrick? This is your fault. This is your generation's fault because the group dating thing started with you guys as well.
Oh, God, yeah. My sister was
where you go out with
that.
10 people at a time.
That's right. And then all 10 girls go to the bathroom at once, and it's like,
well, that goes back to the beginning of time.
And then you take a picture. You have to take like a panoramic picture on the driveway with 20 couple. I don't get that.
And then the reservations at the restaurant.
Pick someone, go to the prom, either go as friends or go as a date.
I do know, though, in the hotel room, my date said something about if I was going to touch a scrotum, and I said, I don't know what that is. So.
Yeah, and that's when she decided not to become a doctor.
Okay, I got nothing for that.
And by the way, what a sweet thing to say on prom night.
Right.
I think you like this creep.
Happy prom.
Yeah, only Sandberg.
Happy prom.
Yeah.
By the way, your father just had a grabber. Yeah. It's 7:59. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:11, Dean Richards will join us in just a second. Stand by for that, people. Also coming up before 10 this morning, Ryan Burrow on the Olympics and the Zika virus. He doesn't have it. Though Ryan Burrow's the kind of newsman, he would get it if he thought it would be a better story. And he could go ahead and fill that out that way because Ryan Burrow is a news hound.
And he would take one for the team.
Takes it very seriously. I'm still trying to figure out how Sandberg hated her prom but had a good time. And then there was some sort of full physical that went on. And then there was, I don't know.
That was really weird. That was awkward.
Don't know. At 8:12 in the morning, I want to remind you on Friday, I'm going to be off Wednesday, Thursday, but on Friday I'll be back because we're going to be in Lyle for the Lyle Eyes to the Sky Hometown Voices, courtesy of our friends at Allstate. We're here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and on Friday we'll take the show on the road to celebrate the 4th of July weekend of the Eyes of the Sky Festival. In Lyle, they must have been doing some test runs of balloons this weekend because I saw a bunch of them.
Oh, cool. Do we know what one we're going to be in?
The blue one.
Oh, cool.
I don't know.
Love the blue
I'm
one.
So excited. Are we all going together?
It's the pretty blue one.
No, I don't know.
I don't know how big the basket is. You know, you got to have a basket. The baskets have a certain capacity.
Yeah. And weight, I would assume.
Yeah.
Well, size, too, because the last time I was in one, I think we could only get three in.
No, I think it's a weight thing.
Is it a weight thing?
Yeah. And but Adam, Cracker Jack engineer Adam Phillips, says that he'll be able to wire us up where we could actually broadcast from the balloon.
So we'll do the whole show up there?
I don't know if we can do the whole show, but we'll do something in
you
the balloon.
You guys, I can do that'd traffic up there. I can see everything.
That would be cool. A live traffic report
awesome.
Because you can actually
take the balloon
see
over
all the
Kennedy.
Traffic.
I don't know.
I don't
if the
have to make it up like
goes,
I always do.
I don't know if the balloon goes that high, though, does it?
Oh, yeah.
But you could still hear the people on the ground.
We're going, the balloons we're talking about, we're going to 30,000 feet.
Wow.
What?
So, yeah,
are they pressurized?
I don't know.
Do we drive ourselves, or do they provide a
have
pilot?
You been in one?
No.
Okay, here's the thing. I shouldn't even tell you this, because it lessens the impact. But the first time the burners kick in, you know, and it fires up the flame to keep the helium. It's helium, isn't it?
Yeah, it's helium.
Yeah, it's helium. No, Steve, it's not. It's something else. It's magic. But the helium in the balloon, when they fire up the flame for that, you think something terrible has happened because you hear this loud noise. You turn around and you see fire. All of those things don't go with, you know, flying. But that's what keeps the balloon, you know, fired up and in the air, literally fired up. So you'll hear that noise and it will frighten you the same way it frightened me. But then the cool thing is when the burner isn't hit, you can hear all the conversations from the ground. It's remarkably peaceful, and it's really beautiful.
When do they hit the burner?
That's the secret.
Really?
Yeah. You don't tell them. Yeah, you gotta, we won't tell you anything.
You got to know the balloon people to know the answer to that.
Does your hair catch on fire?
Well, not unless your hair is in the burner.
Oh, okay.
And in my case, no danger whatsoever. There's free parking and free admission during the broadcast on Friday morning. Head out to Lyle. Have some fun with us. Details at WGNRadio.com/events. And the Steve Cochran Show live from the Lyle Eyes to the Skies Festival. All right. Special guest on the phone? Dean Richards will join us in just a second. Should I just go to the phone then? We'll be fighting in the streets. There's only one guy we play this for. Coach?
Good morning. Congrats, Steve.
Hey, buddy, how are you?
Hey.
Coach Q, Joel Quenneville from your Chicago Blackhawks. Well, nice surprise. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Congratulations. That's a great position to be in. We're happy to have you. I just want you to know how much everyone at the Blackhawks, we value our relationship and wish you 4 great more years. And, hey, look forward to it.
By the way, thanks. And for people that didn't know that there was a contract discussion going on, this also means that I will be playing center for Coach Q for the Hawks this fall.
Well, let's say that's a whole different animal.
That remains to be seen.
Suddenly it's not a congratulations, it's I got to make a phone call. Well, thanks, man. It means a lot that you called. I appreciate that very much. How's your summer?
It's been going. It's been flying by. We've been very busy doing different things. And the last 3 summers, we haven't had much of one, and done several little trips and just coming back from the draft and some coaches' meetings last week. It was a busy week as well, but this kind of gets a little slow now going into the convention and coming out of it. We've got the World Cup coming up, so we'll get some meetings with that, and looking forward to that as well.
And you got this new 18-year-old kid who's a phenom that everybody's talking about, so so camp should be fun. And, you know, I said this before, Coach, I know you understand this. I don't want to miss a minute of summer. I don't want to rush any of it, but I can't wait for you guys to get back.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I know that, you know, we had to make some adjustments as we've gone into the summer like we had in the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, we are always in that situation where some of the decisions we make are a little bit more on the business side than the hockey side. But Stan does a great job of fitting it all together. And, you know, we're coming back with the league MVP, Rookie of the Year. So that's exciting with the job they did last year. We expect these guys to get better as well. So we're happy with a lot of things, and you know, I think change is always good for us as well.
Yeah, and everybody's disappointed to see Shazzy go, but that's all part of the business. It's unfortunate. We've seen it several times, and wish him nothing but luck as long as he's not playing the Blackhawks. Dave, say hi to Coach.
Coach, good morning. I was going to ask you, what are you going to miss most about Shaw?
Oh, just his personality. He just brings so many different intangibles to the rink and to the game. You got to love the guy. You know, he's going to do well in Montreal. And just that every day in your face, he plays all out. And, you know, as a teammate and as a player, you have to respect that and appreciate that. And I think you make guys around you play at that same level and leave it out there. But that's he's one guy that you never have to worry about him bringing it. And the way he gets to the net, the greasy part of his game is as greasy as anybody. So,
By the way, his hockey puck headbutt summer camp still has a couple of slots open for the kids that want to learn how to headbutt a hockey puck.
I had some highlights. I put that at the top of my list, too.
It was so great. And remember when Coach was on with us like a couple days later? He goes, if he's going to do that, he's got to do it in a way that's not so obvious.
Yeah. Discreet.
Coach, all the best, man. I really appreciate your phone call. It's very nice of you.
Great. Have a great day. Happy for you, Steve.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you at convention. That's Coach Joe.
It's nice.
It's nice. And he's referring to the fact that I've agreed to a an extension. Well, it's a new contract. Four
new
more
deal.
Years. Four more years.
Four more years.
But he
is
didn't,
there any
he didn't seem anxious to talk about you playing center for him.
That seemed odd.
Yeah. It was
odd.
A little awkward.
Sandberg, your thoughts?
It's like you're the president.
I was just
four
say,
more years.
Say, is there any correlation to this and the election?
Yeah.
For the next president.
Yeah. Listen, at some point, somebody's got to step in as a viable third-party alternative.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor.
8:23, Dean Richards live from Channel 9. Well, I know what your top story is.
You.
Well, that's not what I was going to say.
You're the top story.
Well, that should be. You're
Steve
right.
Steve Cochran renewed for four more years.
Four more years.
I guess congratulations.
What do you mean you guess?
Well, I was told by the management that you were asking too much money and that I was going to take over. That's what I was told.
So you're actually.
So imagine my surprise.
So this is the depth of our friendship. You were hoping I'd cave or that I would leave?
I was told that.
Wow.
That because I work way cheaper than you do, as you know.
Most people do.
I guess congratulations.
That's good of you. It really is.
Happy
really
for
is.
You.
You sound thrilled, I must say. That's what ends up.
You know what? Dean was basing it on the Stegxit on Friday.
Oh,
you
had
the Steve exit.
Yeah, I was going to leave.
Yeah.
Turns out now I'm staying until Trump throws me out. When President Trump throws me out, I'm going to sue him. All right.
Truth of the matter is that no one could be happier for you than me.
Thank you.
No one thinks you are perfect for this morning show and as talented as I do, as good a friend as I do. I could not be happier for
this.
Thanks,
buddy.
So well deserved, nice. Especially after they kicked your ass out of there a couple of years ago.
And don't think I didn't think this is all a practical joke. I was just waiting for them to go, kidding, come see us by the bathroom.
Let's wait for him to go to the men's room again. This will be really funny.
For those of you new to the show, I was fired walking out of the men's room. The last time I was fired. You realize, by the way, I've not been fired in 6 years.
Show's not over yet.
I feel but I got to be honest. I feel like I've lost a step.
Is that a record?
It's a good question. I think this may be the longest stretch since I started in the business that I was never fired.
That's good.
Because I got to the big leagues in '85 in Miami, fired there. That was only 5 years in, and then I went on a pattern of firings, which you know. Well, I guess the 10, no, you know what it was? It was the 10 years from when I was at GN until the Star Wars bar characters took over and to the time when I was thrown out. So that's the longest stretch.
You were a serial firee until that point.
But 6 years since I've been fired.
I saw your quote in Robert Feeder talking about the Star Wars bar characters that fired you last time. Mm-hmm. I literally got a cold shiver just reading their names again.
It's like a Harry Potter scene.
Do you know how much psychotherapy I had to go through to get their memory out of my head?
The flinch is back.
All came back reading your quote.
Hey, the Pride Parade, huge success, and congrats to everybody involved. And obviously, thanks again to the authorities involved. But not just that, the people that came out. Everybody looked like they wanted to have a party and also remember the victims of Orlando. Interesting mix, right?
It was really nice. I mean, everybody was there to have fun, but there was a respectful tone to the whole thing. We had a great time. A million people, the police estimates came out this morning, a million people were there. There were like 13 arrests. I mean, you know, compared to the size of the crowd, that's pretty amazing. That's nothing, yeah. So it was a great time. Thank you to everybody who came out and cheered us on, and we just had so much fun.
Meanwhile, the biggest trouble in show business, 50 Cent was arrested. Now, here's a guy that was shot nine times, famously shot nine times over the course of his bad days.
Yep.
And, you know, he's tried to live right. He's tried to do the right thing. Here he's been bankrupt a few times, and his bitches ain't what they used to be, but whose are? So now 50 Cent was arrested for what heinous crime this weekend?
This weekend, in front of 40,000 people, he swore. He used profanity on the island of St. Kitts. It is illegal to swear in public, and he did it on stage. He was singing a song to a recorded track. Was supposed to be a clean version of the recorded track. Somehow it wound up being the not clean version of the recorded track. So for the 40,000 people, they got a big old F-bomb. He was arrested after the show. He appeared in court on Sunday morning. He paid his fine, has returned to the U.S., and I'll bet he'll never forget to clean things up the next time he goes to St. Kitts. Who knew that it's illegal to swear in public there?
I didn't know that. Yeah, I did not know that. And I'm curious who hires 50 Cent and goes, now we want the clean 50.
Yeah. Let's take 50 Cent someplace where it's illegal to swear.
Have anyone seen the YouTube clips of 50? They're okay, I'm sure. Who hires him and says, don't swear?
Yeah. Even his birthday song, It's Your Birthday. Even that one, his most mainstream song, even that one's dirty.
Yeah, I don't get it. Hey, your buddy Dick Van Dyke had a big weekend.
He was in Chicago on yesterday. It was at the Walt Disney Home, 2156 North Tripp Street. Sang a little Disney classic song for everybody there. Really sweet. 90 years old. You cannot stop this guy. He's out there with his quartet that performed at the Tivoli Theater last night at 5 o'clock, but he was at the Disney House at 1, talked about his foundation, talked about restoring not only his home in Danville, but also this Walt Disney home to whom he owes a great deal for putting in Mary Poppins and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and giving him so much in his early career. But there's no stopping this guy. 90 years old, he's making appearances and singing with the kids and just having a great old time while he was here in Chicago.
You know, the interview you did last week with him, the amazing thing to me was his memory of lyrics. Because he did the Danville High School fight song.
Right.
And he did the Dick Van Dyke theme show lyrics, because yep. You know, for those who didn't know, there were words to it. I mean, the guy doesn't miss a trick.
Without the blink of an eye.
I don't remember what day it is.
That's he is remarkable as he is pleasant and polite and courteous and professional and talented. It was just such a pleasure to finally meet him in person. I've interviewed him a couple of times on the phone, but couldn't be nicer. So thanks to him and his wife and all the people who put it together. Very, very, very nice weekend.
And last thing, Prince tributes at the BET Awards. And by the way, congratulations to Beyonce, who, if you haven't seen the video, turned into a bird. So that was interesting. But the BET folks who were disappointed in the Grammys and the Prince tribute there said, wait till the BET Awards, we're going to get it done. You want to set this up?
Yeah, they turned it out last night. There were lots of tributes throughout the show. Jennifer Hudson did Purple Rain. Stevie Wonder did a tribute. Sheila E. Came out and she did a little bit of a Prince tribute. We have a little montage here for you. Really some great stuff. Sheila E. Jennifer Hudson, I thought, was the highlight. I mean, she's always a favorite for me. But they did a really nice job in performing and paying honor to Prince on the show last night. Beyonce won a couple of awards last night. Video of the Year, Top Female R&B Artist of the Year. Drake won 3 awards. So it was fun. It was a fun show. Janelle Monáe, Steve, copied that outfit that you have. It was kind of a white leather suit dancing around.
Yeah, my prom outfit.
She turns around and her butt cheeks are out.
Yep, same outfit.
And then the host, Anthony Anderson from the TV show Blackish, comes out, same outfit, turns around, his butt cheeks are out.
Yeah, well, he borrowed it from me.
So you started the trend on this this buttless fashion.
How do you think I got the new 4-year deal? I'll talk to you later. Thanks, buddy.
Congratulations.
And thanks for the kind words.
Very, very happy for you.
I am blessed to be here, and there's not a lot that's more fun in the world than talking to Dean and doing my best to ruin his credibility. It's 8:32. A discussion of what's in a hot air balloon coming up. Settle down, texters. I know it's called a hot air balloon. They said they could fill it with today's show.
That's pretty good.
Stand by for the big story next on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN.
This is a celebration of 4 more years. Jake's playing the music of my people. All right, I told you in the early 90s I had the Luther Vandross purple jacket. I'm not saying this happened, but I may have had the Janet Jackson Rhythm Nation hat as well. Not with the purple jacket.
Did you have the medals, too, that she had hanging down?
Yeah, and I did the dance.
Really?
Matter of fact, I may have been on tour with her.
Rhythm Nation dancer?
I'm not saying it happened, but I may have been. It's 8:44. Before we get to two very important stories on drinking too much water and going blind by looking at your cell phone, there are some other things you should know. The shock waves from the British exit of the European Union continue. The markets here open in about 35 minutes. Well, a little longer than that. No, what am I talking about? 10 minutes ago.
Yep.
Wow, Steve, get a clock. I was thinking it was 7:45. It's 8:45. What time zone am I in?
You know why it's just going so fast today? We're down 224
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So these are trades that were already backed up in the pipeline when the market kicked off 15 minutes ago. I was so upset about my hot air balloon gaffe.
It wasn't a gaffe. It was a learning experience.
Yeah, or a gaffe. But the amount of money that we actually could lose because of the change in the UK and our relationship is nominal. Yep. The biggest change is specific to the people of the United Kingdom. And because they're our number one ally, of course that matters. Iraq advances in its fight against the Islamic State and has retaken, Iraq has retaken Fallujah. We've got Micah Halpern as our expert on the Middle East. When is Micah going to be on again? What's the update on that, Sandberg? Did you find Micah? Micah Halpern contacted me last week and said he'd like to be on the show again. And I said, well, I'd like to have you on.
We are working on a time with your limited schedule this week. It's a little challenging.
Mm, okay.
Putting that on you.
Okay, great. Excellent. Let's see. Did you hear about the story in Sacramento?
Which one?
It's a white supremacist rally where there was a protest group that encircled the white supremacists. Many were armed with knives, and they started swinging the knives at the protesters, and 10 people were stabbed.
This was bizarre.
All expected to survive, by the way, thankfully. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that rolled for the weekend. I don't want to even talk about this story, but...
Which one?
Well, the West Virginia floods are awful. I think we're up to a death toll of 25 now. And
horrible.
There's more rain more rain expected today.
And that rain, they were saying, came so fast. That's why people were unprepared. Because, you know, early on people are saying, wait, how are they drowning? How is this happening? Why couldn't they seek shelter? It was so fast.
Yeah, that's the words flash and flooding. You don't want them to get it. All right, here's the story I didn't want to tell you. The roller coaster story. It's a roller coaster in Scotland. I'm not a huge coaster fan, but I've been on a bunch of them. And when you're on a roller coaster, there's always that point at the peak where you go click, 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 and you get to the top, and then you start flying down the mountain, whatever the mountain is. And it feels like there's no way the laws of physics will allow you to stay on the track. Several cars of a tsunami roller coaster ride at a theme park in Scotland flew off the tracks, smashed into the rigging for the roller coaster, and fell to the ground.
See, I hate roller coasters.
It's unbelievable.
They scare me.
And at last I knew, there were 10 injuries, some of them kids, obviously. And I'm not aware of anybody dying, but we'll look into that as well. So that's some of the stuff that's happening, so you'll look smart when you get to work at 8 on my clock or at 9 on yours.
Yeah, when you get there.
Coming up, your cell phone's going to make you blind, your smartphone. It's going to make you blind.
Don't tell us that.
No, it's going to happen. And even in hot weather, you can drink too much water. I'm trying to save your lives. That's the regular Steve Cochran Health Corner. You know how we do that every Monday.
You're a giver.
All right, it's my boy JT. And when I say my boy JT, who am I talking about?
Justin Timberlake.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's, by the way, if you've seen the video, the guy with the crazy fro in the video in the grocery store pricing things, that's me.
I thought that was the guy from Roots.
No, it's a different fro.
The Fallon band, not the miniseries.
Yeah, I understand. This is funny. All right, here's our regular health segment. Checking your phone at night might make you go blind. Warning, looking at your smartphone while lying in bed with the lights off can wreak havoc on your vision. I just did this morning where Ross had texted me about something last night after I went to sleep at 5. No, you know, we go to bed early, relatively speaking, to the other grown-ups in the world. And I noticed there was a text from him, but I opened the text, but, you know, you can't see. Until you can see, your brain has to go, all right, we're up. We got to go. Everybody hit the switches. He's awake. And then I'm trying to look at the phone, and it takes a minute for you, you know, to see the phone. It's not instant on like it used to be. So these there was two women who went temporarily blind from constantly checking their phones in the dark. By the way, this is reported in the Washington Post. So, you know, it's actually a legitimate story. Thursday, last Thursday's New England Journal of Medicine, doctors detailed the cases of two women aged 22 and 40 who experienced something called transient smartphone blindness that lasted for months.
Oh, no.
The women complained of recurring episodes of temporary vision loss for up to 15 minutes at a time that would come back at random times. They initially were subjected to a variety of medical exams, MRIs, and heart tests. Doctors couldn't find anything wrong. But minutes after walking into an eye specialist's office, the mystery was solved. I simply asked them, said the eye doctor, what exactly were you doing when this happened? He explained both women typically looked at their smartphones with only one eye while resting on their side in bed in the dark. The other eye was covered by the pillow.
Ooh, that explains a lot for people who get headaches and things like that.
So you have one eye adapted to the light because it's looking at the phone. The other is adapted to the dark. And when they put the phone down, they couldn't see with a phone eye. That's because it's taking minutes to catch up to the other eye, and your eyes like to stay in balance. So, you know that thing that makes you go blind?
Don't do it.
That's not it. It's this. It's looking at the phone in the middle of the night.
So I have to ask, what's a girl supposed to do before she goes to bed?
The other thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing would be the thing I would recommend.
Don't look at your phone.
All right, how about this? You drinking water? You drinking enough water? When it's hot?
We should probably drink more, right?
Well, I don't know. Dr. Kevin Most says, you know, alternate with, you know, G2 or Gatorade. And you're going to be better because you're popping the electrolytes, plus you're flushing the system with the water.
Yeah.
So you know it's really hot out when you have like 15 empty bottles in your golf cart and you still haven't peed. But there is a thing called overhydration. Overhydration means you drank too much water. You know that feeling when you drank so much, it's like sloshing around as you walk?
It's like you feel bloated.
Yeah, but you literally can feel the slosh. Dave, you know what I'm talking about. You felt that with booze.
Oh, I never felt it with booze, but yes, I know what you're talking
about. The slosh.
About.
The slosh is uncomfortable.
Yes. You're not supposed to hydrate with booze.
I know. Doc Most told me.
Mild symptoms of overhydration include nausea and vomiting. Well, they're not mild anymore. A severe headache and changes in mental state, confusions or disorientation, and bloating.
Yes.
Because you're literally retaining water. Severe symptoms include unconsciousness, seizures, coma, or death. I got to tell you, I can't disagree. Death is a severe symptom.
It's a bad symptom. It's a permanent symptom.
Overhydration. How do you beat it? Weigh yourself. Endurance athletes weigh themselves before and after a race to determine how much water they've lost and how much they need to replenish.
Really? So if you are not at the weight you should be, you should drink water? Or if you're too much?
Well, I'll give you an
example. Too much?
Like Friday morning. Yeah, it was Friday. Friday morning, I weighed myself. I played golf Friday afternoon, and it was really hot. And afterwards, like Friday night, I weighed myself. I'd lost 5 pounds. That's fluid.
Yeah, it's water weight.
Yeah. So
at least your bloating was gone.
So I immediately stuck my head in a bucket of water. No, the weighing yourself, that's why it works that way. Know your limits. 1 liter per hour is the maximum. How much is in a liter of water?
1 liter per hour. Let's figure
out
how many
bottles that is. Aren't you supposed to drink half of your weight in ounces?
Well, that's been disputed in different places. Pace your hydration, running a half or a full marathon. Hydrate properly before and during your exercise. That pre-hydration stuff, and Mary, you do a lot of running. That pre-hydration stuff's a big deal.
Yeah, but I always forget.
Okay, you guys, 2 bottles of 16.9 fluid ounces makes up a liter. Okay. So 2 big bottles of water is a liter.
2 bottles of 16?
Yeah.
So 32 ounces?
Yeah, the big bottles.
That's a liter an hour, man. That's a lot of water.
It is a lot of water.
Right, but you should only do that when you're super hot, like me.
Hot temperature
wise. Some people are really overboard with the water, I think. I mean, where they walk around with a water bottle all day long.
Right.
And they drink. It's like, what have you done physically? Well, nothing, but I've got to drink all this water.
Right. It makes you feel like you're healthy.
If you're at high altitude.
Yes, that's important.
You need to do it.
And one other thing in our health segment, how to know that you've lost your voice. Here is Colombian announcer. I don't know his name. Oh, Carlos Bacca scores for Colombia in the Copa America. And the Colombian announcer may have set a record here as he holds the goal for 37 seconds. Listen.
Gol de Colombia!
That's 10 seconds. That's unbelievable.
No, he's doing it again?
I thought he was saying Ricola, like he needed a cough drop. Didn't it sound like that at the
Well,
end?
You know, he may need a lozenge.
Oh, he's going to need
that's
a lot more
very,
than that.
Very, very impressive.
Oh, that's great.
And annoying.
Could you do that, Dave?
Yeah, Dave, for a Northwestern
Let's
touchdown.
Do it. Okay, ready, Dave? Go.
No, I don't think it's going to have the same impact.
That was like 4 seconds.
That's too high, Dave.
4 seconds.
And I was being lead hitter.
It has to be organic.
Have your own broadcast booth. Unbelievable. It's 9 o'clock back after this on 720
WGN. Go Cats.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show continues. Thanks for all the texts in relation to me agreeing to a new four-year contract here, which I'm very excited about. Blessed to be here, and will continue to be here every morning, except for the mornings I'm not here, through, is that right, 2020? Yeah, 4 years, 2020.
Yeah, 2020.
Wow. I need to rethink this. 4 more years. Now, listen, this is a job I always wanted. I'm lucky to have it. Lucky to be looking at you every day, Dave Bennett.
And I feel the same way, and I'm very happy for you.
Thank you for that. Listen, I think an update is due on Mike Madigan and company. Mike Madigan and John Cullerton have had some discussions and talks. Here's what we know. Madigan is going to call or has called the House, and Cullerton has called the Senate back into session this week on Wednesday. Now, as recently as last Wednesday, after calling the House to session, Madigan canceled a day or so ahead of time. What we believe is going on, and I talk to people regularly about this all the time, is an attempt to squeeze the governor in the state for a bailout of CPS. And I'm here to tell you, I don't see any scenario where the state of Illinois is going to bail out the Chicago public school system again. Now, whether or not that's fair depends on your perspective. But for the rest of the state of Illinois, who has, in my opinion, been held hostage by Mike Madigan's overabundance of power, and his refusal to make adjustments with trial lawyers and with public unions and to try to do what's right for all of the state of Illinois as opposed to some narrow interests. Because those are all fine people, Dave. Those are fine people. Mm-hmm. The people in the public unions are fine people. They deserve the benefits they've accrued in the same way we all deserve the benefits we've accrued. But in tough times where poor management has caused us to be in a terrible situation, everybody has to adjust.
I'm Dennis Muzin.
I don't know who Dennis is, but everybody, including Dennis, has to adjust. Everybody. And because of that, Mike Madigan needs to be someone who actually serves the state of Illinois, not someone who serves Mike Madigan. Again, my opinion. But it's an educated opinion. I spend more than the time I'd like to allocate in my life to talking to people about him and talking about this. So if this is all a ploy to garner a favor for a bailout for CPS. Like, my nieces are in CPS schools. I want CPS schools to be a huge success. I want CPS schools to thrive. But I don't want special needs kids downstate or schools downstate or schools in Bloomington Normal or schools anywhere else in the state to suffer. Now, do we need a funding system adjustment? Probably. You know, in school districts that are doing very well, that maybe have an excess, there ought to be a way to figure out how to handle that money so that some of it is shared with districts that are suffering. But it all comes down to the same thing. Bad management creates bad decisions, which creates a waste of money. And so much money has been wasted. The idea that we would turn over more to a failing system is pretty hard. It's a hard sell.
And I'm just curious, too, how can you not vote? I know it's a Band-Aid solution, and we've talked about this with Governor Rauner and Leslie Munger, but how can you not vote for the stopgap bill? It keeps it going through the end of the year. It'll ensure it's fully funded. It'll ensure that the schools open in the fall. Yes, it's temporary, but at least it's a solution for now.
Yeah, and by the way, this is another compromise Rauner's made. Show me the compromises Madigan's made. It's just outrageous. It's outrageous. And for those of you confused as to why we need a stopgap budget, we need a stopgap budget to get beyond Election Day.
Right.
Because these folks in Springfield, and yes, I mean that as a generality, it sounds like these folks in Springfield are so concerned with their own narrow self-interest. All they're concerned with is don't screw up my reelection. Don't screw up my reelection or my agenda.
Yeah.
That's why you would need a stopgap budget.
Yeah.
And a year down the road.
And you talked last week, too, about many of these programs, especially, and we know personally a lot of people, myself included, involved in the domestic violence programs, they've laid off staff already. They've cut back on people's hours. They can't pay.
That's exactly right. Right. And the pension holidays that go back to, was it Edgar or was it Blagojevich that started the pension holidays?
Blagojevich, I believe.
Yeah, the pension holiday system that was set up to divert money that should have funded the pension system that actually went for salary increases for CPS administrators and teachers, along with spending billions of dollars on pension pickups for teachers and teachers' salaries that go back, well, you know, to 1998, is just hideous mismanagement. And because of that, CPS is in a world of hurt. And I like Forrest Claypool, and you like Forrest Claypool, and we like Forrest Claypool. And he's tasked to try to fix all this. Well, it's not as easy as somebody saying, yeah, you know, we're the CPS school system. We know we've screwed it up in the past. But if you guys give us enough money, we're going to get it right this time. Based on what? I've talked to my sister about this. I am amazed. And unfortunately, my nieces, her kids are in, you know, they're in good schools. And there's a lot of really good schools in the CPS system. There's a lot of really marginal schools in the CPS system. But I'm amazed at the amount of money parents have to generate to fund programs in schools. Constant fundraisers. Constant opportunities for parents to take time out of their lives to figure out new ways to make sure that their kids have certain extracurricular activities so they can, you know, fully enjoy their education and maximize their lives.
By the way,
because the CPS the school system just doesn't know what they're doing too often, and from now and in the past.
Governor Edgar in 94 signed the pension funding law into plan, but it had bipartisan support. Tribune wrote an article saying it was all doomed to fail. It was just too lavish, and Blagojevich signed the extension of that. So it was a twofer.
Lawmakers will be back in Springfield on Wednesday, allegedly, and we'll find out if Democrats are willing to put the people of Illinois ahead of the Chicago Teachers Union and other interests for the stopgap and school funding bills. And again, Rauner's been there a year and a half. Madigan's been there 40. Rauner had an agenda of 45 different items that are now down to four, none of which he is trying to shove down anybody's throat. Madigan is continuing to stick to his agenda. You know, the Republicans in Washington and the Democrats in Springfield, they are the problem. It's 9:19. We're back after this on 720 WGN. I want to congratulate Kevin Cordes from Naperville. Dave, double-check that I'm right about this. I'm almost positive he qualified last night. It's Cordes. Great family. And Kevin Cordes has been swimming and training in Singapore, I think, for most of the last 4 years, getting ready for this second-chance run at the Olympics. He came very close last time. Let's go live now to Dave in Rio. Dave, what do you have?
American record last night at the U.S. Olympic trials in the 100-meter breaststroke.
Right.
58.94, second fastest in the world this year.
Pretty impressive.
Very impressive.
So congratulations to Kevin, the whole Cordes family. They'll be headed for Rio. Which brings us to Ryan Burrow. Now, Ryan, you weren't in Rio. You were in Florida. Actually, before we talk Olympics, I want you to talk about this for a second. So this is your first trip with your family to Disney?
Yeah, that was an interesting week to be in Orlando, that's for sure.
And this nightmare happens with a gator attack.
We had the Pulse shooting pretty much the evening.
Oh, you were there for that as well.
Yeah, we arrived. Actually, we arrived the day that the singer from The Voice was shot that day. And, you know, the next day was the Pulse shooting. And then the day after that was the boy who was taken by the alligator. We were at a resort. We saw the helicopters. It was the Grand Floridian was right next to us. We were at the Polynesian. And sure enough, as the electric parade was going on, the helicopters started flying overhead. We didn't know what was going on. And then the horrifying news after that. So,
and how did Disney handle it for people that were staying on property?
You know, very limited information, obviously. Everything is, it's the happiest place on earth. And, you know, with understanding, too, you have to, you know, I mean, as a parent of two young children, you got to, you know, you don't want to scare the kids too much.
Right. Right.
So we were, you know, we all knew what was going on. Everyone's got cell phones and, you know, just continued on with your vacation.
One of the things we talked about, because we know what a news hound Ryan is how much trouble he was in his hotel room with his wife, because he kept saying, I've got to go cover this and I've got to go cover that. Did that happen?
She took my cell phone away from me.
That's what I thought.
Thankfully, ABC had two fantastic reporters in Jim Ryan and Aaron Katursky. I sent a couple things kind of under the table to Jim Ryan to know what was going on. But
to your wife.
after 15 minutes, my wife took my cell phone away and said, no more. Vacation.
All right. So let's shift to the Olympics and the Zika virus. And the athletes that are bailing, and the other news associated with this. What do you know?
This is the time. We're just under 6 weeks out, and rosters are being finalized. Qualifications are taking place. You mentioned there's a lot of local athletes who are going, and so you know we're starting to find out more and more what's kind of on the athletes' minds, whether they're going, whether they're not. Surprisingly, I think Pau Gasol says he would like to go now and play for Spain. He had been concerned about that in May, saying he wasn't sure, and he was reading up on it. It sounds like he definitely does want to play. Jimmy Butler now on the roster. We talked briefly with Jerry Reinsdorf last month, and he didn't say in as many words, but he has a preference whether or not they go, and he wouldn't share it. I think we all kind of know where the NBA will understand, not just on Zika, but, you know, fear of these guys rolling ankles and breaking fingers and things like that. But, you know, it's a tough decision. If you're a millionaire like Rory McIlroy and you know, maybe a gold medal doesn't define you as an athlete, maybe you can make that decision. If you're, you know, a young 20-something who's dedicated their whole life to pole vaulting, you know, maybe a mosquito doesn't scare you, and you want to live out your dreams. That's kind of where we're at right now as far as where this is falling.
Ryan, Rio obviously has a lot on its plate with all of the other issues that they have going on. Are they taking any sort of precautions, either by spraying or acknowledging even that this is a problem?
They have said that they're going to take all the precautions, but I mean, outside of, you know, killing every mosquito, there's really not a lot they can do. They, you know, the interesting thing we're starting to see is now not just the athletes, who obviously are you know, competing for you know, their own goals and their own glory, but it's interesting watching some of the tourism that's involved with this. They expected 200,000 Americans to travel down to Brazil for these games, and now officials think that maybe half that, maybe 100,000.
So the economic impact, the crime around Rio, the fact that the facilities are somewhat unfinished, the fact that the water is polluted, what's going right in Rio?
Well, the games are still scheduled. You know, the date is still on the calendar. Look, you know, once these games get underway, we'll start focusing more on the sports. This tends to happen every time. You know, we've had Sochi where the paint was still wet, right? We had Athens.
The airport wasn't even finished.
We didn't know what to expect in China from the government, right, at that time. So, you know, I'm the games will be played. There will be amazing stories to be told, and we'll see, you know, following and afterwards what the Zika impact was. We've got a couple athletes, actually. One, a Jamaican sprinter, Kamar Bailey Cole, who actually has Zika virus, says he's going to go ahead and compete anyways in the Olympic trials this week.
The jurisdictional issues are interesting to me because you've got an impeachment of the president.
Sure.
You got a political situation where there's political upheaval. So security was an issue and will be an issue at any games because of the political unrest. Who's running the government, and how do people who are tourists there know they're going to be okay?
Well, you know, always question marks, and they say security is going to be in line with what it was in London as far as the numbers of people and the people they'll have out on the streets. Now, the training and the qualifications of those people, we'll see, I guess.
But I don't know how this works. Is the IOC responsible for bringing international hit squads in?
Well,
because you've got the local security forces who have the lion's share of the work, right?
I mean, I think we know how the IOC operates. They have a hand and they have an understanding and a little pulse on everything that's going
right.
on. But ultimately, it is up to the locale, whether it be the local police in the cities where the events will be taking place, or the Brazilian
could have
officials.
Been here. Ryan. Could have been 6 weeks away from starting.
And one of these things that I was out there. Were you out there, Andrea, when they made the announcement in 2009?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, "What?" And I think now, where we're at financially, and
it's brutal. There was a story yesterday that the velodrome, where the indoor cycling is supposed to take place, is still not ready.
Yeah, and that's you've got 5.5 weeks now.
Take the bikes outside. Take the bikes outside.
Is there an image of it on there?
There's a picture, yeah.
Artist rendering of what it could have been.
It looks partially ready.
Yeah.
With the ceiling.
Yeah, the ceiling's not
They
finished.
Had 7 years, but, there's going to be... It's going to be a little tight there at the end. But, like I said, this does happen quite a bit. We'll see. I mean, if there are any venues that need to be changed, they're at a point of no return now.
You can't put it in
London. London was always kind of the backup just in case because they already had the venues. But at this point, you're full speed ahead. In the meantime, we've got all these athletes. We've got a couple. I'm going to speak with a couple rhythmic gymnasts on the North Shore who qualified, and they'll be going up. So we'll chat with them a little bit tomorrow. And we said Jimmy Butler, and we've got a volleyball player from Wheaton. So a lot of exciting things at least going on with the athletes right now.
All right, Ryan, thank you. That's Ryan Burrow from ABC News in our own newsroom. We're back after this with the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
How about that whole deal?
He's talking about your new deal.
He's talking about the new contract extension. Thank you. Thank you, DJ. Calling him DJ now, Donald J. DJ Trump and the Hizzy. It's 9:43. I haven't been able to tell time all morning, which seems like an odd affliction, but that's too shall pass. Several things happened over the weekend that I think are worthy of you hearing about. Jake Tapper sat down with Bernie Sanders and said, Bernie, yes, Jake, Bernie, what is the deal here? What are you talking about? Is he ever going to fully support Hillary Clinton, America's worst presidential candidate, right after Donald Trump? Listen.
But when your supporters hear you say that in all likelihood your vote will go to Hillary Clinton, do you think they come away thinking that maybe you'll run as a third party candidate? Maybe it's not that important to you whether or not she wins? I mean, there's a hesitation there.
Well, look, Jake, I think media focuses on politics as a game. What we are talking about and what this whole campaign is about is transforming.
With all due respect, Senator, I'm not viewing this as a game. I'm looking at the fact that I talk to your supporters all the time, and many of them do not want to vote for Hillary Clinton. They feel very negatively towards her. And if it is important to you, as you say it is, to defeat Donald Trump, I wonder if you're truly doing everything you can do to defeat Donald Trump.
Oh, I am going to do everything that I can to do to defeat Donald Trump. But a lot of that responsibility about winning the American people over to her side is going to rest with Secretary Clinton. Is she going to address the issues that we got something like 12, 13 million votes?
Hey, there's something weird going on with Bernie. I mean, along with not wanting to give up and loving the spotlight, and good for him. He worked hard for a year. But at 74 years old, after being a backbencher in Congress and not getting a lot of attention, and as Senator Durbin said on this show, he's screaming about the same things he screamed at me at lunch about for the last 20 years, he doesn't seem willing to step back.
And I'm not sure why. Because I know we keep saying this is his 15 minutes before he has to go back and be Bernie Sanders, but he's saying things like these buzzwords, Steve. I'm going to vote for Hillary. She's got my vote. I mean, he's saying everything as though someone who has already given up has.
But he doesn't.
Right.
And he
Why?
Keeps. Yeah, I don't know. And in the process, he keeps those who are very active, very passionate Bernie Sanders supporters, Bernie believers, and keeps them hanging out in limbo.
Yeah.
Now, look, the truth is there'll be some Sanders voters who, believe it or not, will vote for Trump. But probably not enough to make a difference. I never in my wildest dreams imagined I could even consider voting for Hillary Clinton. Yet here I am sitting considering it because Trump is so terrible. I don't get it. I don't get how we got to this place.
I think a lot of people share that view.
You guys remember when Mitch McConnell was on a couple of weeks ago with me, the leader of the Senate, most powerful Republican in the nation. He was plugging his book. We had a delightful conversation, which I believe is still available on podcasts, wherever podcasts are. And you can get them at WGNRadio.com or the WGN Radio app, for instance, and tune in, places like that.
And he signed his book to you and everything.
Yes, he did. I believe it was F Off Steve.
Yes.
I think that's what it was. But Mitch McConnell was asked a very legitimate question this weekend. He said, is Donald Trump qualified to be the guy?
Do you believe he's qualified? And how do you convince all those voters to think he isn't?
Well, look, I think there's no question that he's made a number of mistakes over the last few weeks. I think they're beginning to right the ship. It's a long time until November. And the burden obviously will be on him to convince people that he can handle this job. He's beginning to use a prepared script more often, which I think is absolutely appropriate for any candidate, whether you're a longtime politician like Hillary Clinton or whether you're new to the game like Donald Trump.
I didn't hear you say whether you thought he was qualified.
Look, that'll be up to the American people to decide. You know, he won the Republican nomination fair and square. He got more votes than anybody else against a whole lot of well-qualified candidates. And so our primary voters have made their decision as to who they want to be the nominee. The American people will be able to make that decision in the fall.
No, Senator McConnell, no. It's not up to the American people to decide how you feel about something. The question was, how do you feel about the qualifications of Donald Trump to be president? If you ask me, Steve, how do you feel about the fact that it's a sunny day? Well, that's up to the people outside walking by to decide. And they're going to let me know how I feel. Go away, Mitch.
Didn't we do this one time?
Check, please. It's over.
Didn't we do this one time before you said, ask me a question about anything and how a true politician will answer
it? You could ask me what time it is. And I go, well, in the interest of time and the clock that is on your watch and your wrist or on the wall, I think that's something that really we have to consider. We're breaking down into committees and we're going to talk about it. And I could probably get back to you with some other information. No, it's 10 to 10.
Steve, how do you feel today?
So tired of them. So, so very tired. You know, what it all comes down to is how do the American people feel? That's why Jimmy Kimmel took a camera on the street and took that camera on the street to ask a very important question of those who support Donald Trump. Is there anything at all that would change their views?
What would Trump have to do to lose your vote?
Take my guns.
That's it?
That's it.
Punching a woman right in the face on national TV.
Be a child molester?
Anything else?
That's about it.
Short of killing somebody, I don't know.
There's nothing he could do at all?
Nope.
Like murder somebody?
Well, yeah, that would probably stop it right there.
What if he set the American flag on fire?
That's one of the freedoms that Donald Trump stands for.
What if a picture of Trump surfaced showing him smoking crack? Would you still vote for him?
Absolutely.
What if he had a Hitler mustache?
Absolutely.
What if he said that Japan and South Korea could get nuclear weapons?
Absolutely.
What if he stood in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shot somebody? Would you still vote for him?
Absolutely.
Even if he got a tattoo on his forehead that said, sit here, ladies?
Absolutely.
What if he turned out to have a tattoo of a swastika on his shoulder?
He probably does.
And you would still vote for him?
I mean, I got friends that have swastikas on their arms, so, I mean, and they're cool.
What if he punched the Pope in the face?
I'm a Catholic. Punch away.
You can't help it. You can't make it up. Those are real people who support Trump. And at that point, you just go, do I want to be in that club? I'm just saying, ask yourself. 951, this is 720 WGN. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but here's my number, so call me maybe. 312-981-7200. Again, thanks to everybody for the nice text, nice notes. I will be around for some time to come. I've agreed to a new four-year contract with 720 WGN. The only job I want.
Ooh.
And I'm lucky enough to have it. So thank you for the support. And we'll be here for it.
See, we're clapping.
Rob Feeder at robertfeeder.com and I had a conversation. He has more of an extensive piece on this if you're interested. That's all.
It's a nice article.
Thank you to Robert Feeder.
It's a very nice article.
Well, one of the things I brought up in the piece we talked about were the old days and the dark days when the Star Wars Bars characters took over. And in the past few days, the statement is made, just because it comes in a British accent doesn't mean it's going to be smart. Mm. I would extend that to Sam Zell and say, just because it has money doesn't mean it's going to be smart. So several texters asked, because, you know, we get insulated here and we forget that people may not know the story. But several texters asked, how did those people ever take over? And the fact is, the Tribune Company, which had been owned and run by, you know, decent people for a long time.
Yes.
Eventually moved the company to a point where, and it was largely newspaper debt, where they decided to sell. Sam Zell, who has never run a people business that I'm aware of successfully, he's really good at selling office furniture. But Sam Zell decided that he was going to reinvent the newspaper. And that's when he brought in the Star Wars bar characters who came in, including a guy named Randy Michaels, who had a ton of success in radio, doing schlock jock radio. And he came in and brought in a guy named Kevin Matheny, famously known as Pig Virus from Howard Stern's days, and almost destroyed this place. And by the way, Tom Langmuir's not off the hook on this either. Tom Langmuir sat around and watched the whole thing happen and then claimed he couldn't do anything about it. So all of these characters led to the demise of the radio station. And in 2010, they fired me, so I left. And then in 2013, Jimmy DeCastro came back under the direction of Larry Wirt. And Larry Wirt and DeCastro and I have been friends for a long time. And then Jimmy asked me if I would come back, and I said, yes.
Yes.
And here's how much will it cost me? And then I came back, and you know, we've made all these changes. And thanks to Jimmy and Todd and Larry Wirt and all those folks, things are going very well. Thank you.
Yes. We've never been happier. Okay, I haven't.
No,
Marco, you guys are all happy.
We're having a good
time. It sounds good.
But thanks for asking.
People are happy, right?
Yeah, right. Well, it's a fun job, you know?
It is.
Steve, what's on your mind?
I want to know, how much is your new contract worth? You've been talking about it all morning.
I don't think I've been talking about it all morning, Stephen. I don't like to bring up specific numbers, but five figures, my friend. I just won't tell you where the decimal point is. Chris, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm wondering if you've asked any of the politicians on the Democratic side whether there's something Hillary Clinton could do to make you not vote for her.
Well, I'm not saying I am going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, this is a disaster to me because they're both so reprehensible.
Correct, right. And what you said, though, is that Mitch McConnell should answer the question. Mitch McConnell should answer the question.
Right, right.
And
so you're asking
you
me
just,
what could... what would
you just said. You just said, oh, I didn't say I'd vote for her. But you didn't answer the question.
All right, well, I'm
just
sorry. Repeat
like
the question.
McConnell.
Hold on, Chris. Repeat the question and I'll answer it.
Okay. The question is...
Yes.
Is there something that Hillary Clinton could do that would make you not vote for her?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I guess I would start with the fact that she would commit to some of the cockamamie programs and things that she's come out with or that he's come out with, or that there would be more that would be directly criminally related to the email thing or to the foundation. Look, there's stuff we don't know about the foundation that could be criminal. All of that would make
that
me not vote for her.
If that came out, would you publicly say on the radio,
absolutely,
no, I'm not going to vote for
absolutely
her?
Absolutely.
Well, good
for you. If that's directly,
yeah. Good for you, because I have felt recently that, you know, Trump is not ideal, Hillary's not ideal, but I feel like the other side, whatever side I'm on, is always saying, oh, you can't vote for him. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, Chris, but here's the difference. I got to put you on hold because we got to go, but thank you for the call, and you're right, and I do know what you mean. And people who think I just get on the air to bash Trump, I'm concerned about the future of this country. In both cases, Hillary scares me too. Just today, not as much. Bill and Wendy are next. What's the new thing with Bill and Wendy? They just come in at 10:03 because they think I'm done then? Oh, that's right. I'm not done till 10:03.